Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Been doing it for three decades. One of my favorites, the OG John Lopez. I love his tales. That's why we tell him to tell us stories every once in a while. And yesterday, I challenged the OG. The OG came through, which he usually does. And he's listed already the top 20 moments of his storied three-decade-plus career covering sports. He's been all over the place. We've heard from Olympic heroes. We've heard from the Dream Team. We've heard from some of the best moments in the history of college football where he was right there. Vince Young running into the end zone against USC. Cordell Stewart to Westbrook, Colorado. We had convicts versus Catholics.
Wide right.
Wide right. Michael Jordan. You were there when Michael Jordan made the shot over Byron Russell in Game 6 of the 1996
NBA Finals.
Tiger
Woods at Pebble in 2000.
The list goes on.
It was a lot of fun.
That's just the top 20, but now we're down to five. And if the top 20 consists of that, I mean, my goodness, John Lopez, you're going to blow my skirt up.
Well, it's fun going back and looking at these, and they're in semi-chronological order, so I won't complain if someone thinks that these that we have are not on their list, but they're on my list. And the reason is because just the moments you have in this business when you're writing and covering events and you get to do it. So I'm going to give you two that we don't necessarily have audio for, but they were the most important to me. The Super Bowl comes here in 2003, and I had this idea to talk to, and I'd known him a little bit at the Ryder Cup. I hanged out with him a little bit at Olympic Games in Greece and elsewhere.
Bad and bougie.
I got to speak with him a little bit. So I had this idea to sit down with former President George H.W. Bush.
Oh, wow.
And write a column about Houston's first fans, you know, the Bushes. You know, Barbara Bush always kept score at the baseball games. He was always at the Ryder Cup and other events and baseball games and such. And so I sent out an email. And sure enough, you know, within just a matter of hours, I get an email back. You know, he kind of knew who I was because we had met and obviously read me in the Chronicle and invited me to his office on the west side, off of Westheimer, on the west side of town.
Bad and bougie.
Like the next day or whatever.
Did you get a drink?
Days. What do you mean?
I'm always intrigued, but like nice offices, like what they offer you to drink, just
what? Well, wait till you hear, because so I go to his office. I'm sure it's still there. I don't know if his people are still there or not. No, because there's still a George Bush
you
office.
Need to break some news
you know
what
I'm saying? Though he still has an office because of all the people that want to know about him. Anyway, so I go up to whatever floor it is, and the elevator doors open, and in front of me is a bulletproof glass.
Damn.
With a Secret Service agent standing behind it holding a pistol.
No way.
100%
like
true.
Like right when you got off the elevator?
First thing you see. And then you just go up to him and say who you are. And, oh, yeah, okay. And so then they open the doors.
Did he at least put the pistol in his pocket
or
something?
Well, it wasn't pointed at me, you know. But you know, what I'm saying is, so I get in there. This is one of my favorite all-time stories. This is why I went on my top five. So I get in there and I sit down with the former president. And we talked for about an hour. I mean, he just loved sports so much. And I shared a little bit of this story when he passed because it was it's when I really got to know him the best. And we just talked everything. Aggie football, he's a big Aggie. Fishing, he's a big fisherman. I mean, we just hit it off big time. And plus, you know, we're talking about the Super Bowl and the first fans and all that. So then we're sitting there, and it's about an hour has passed, and we're talking about all the things. And this is actually in the archives. If you want to read the column I did on him from 2003, it's in the Chron.com archives. So we're kind of wrapping up, and I stand up, and he goes, hey. And I can't do a George Bush, but.
Yeah, don't.
He goes, hey, do you want to see some really cool guns that I have?
What?
He had in his next room, in the next office room, he had a collection of a bunch of the gifts that he's gotten, shotguns, rifles, pistols, because he was an outdoorsman, you know, and he knew that I was. So I go in there, and he pulls out this big, long shotgun that has all kinds of engravings and gold on it and stuff. And he hands it. He hands it to me. So I'm holding a shotgun in front of the president, the former president.
Is it loaded?
I don't think so, but I'm holding it in front of him, and he goes, "Just feel that. Let's feel how good that feels." And I kind of hold it up.
What is going on right now?
I hold it up to my shoulder, and as I hold it up to my shoulder, kind of pointing it out in the distance, I snap. You know how you snap sometimes? And I went, "Oh crap! What if that Secret Service agent that I just passed happens to look at the camera in this room and sees me holding a shotgun next to the former president? I mean, they would be rushing the room and taking me down and everything else." And so I said, "Oh," I got all nervous. I said, "Oh, thank you, Mr. President." And I gave it back to him. And some king of some, you know, country somewhere gave him this shotgun. And so he let me hold it, took it out of the case. And so that is one of my all-time top five stories.
Good
right
Lord,
there.
Man, where are you going to go from here? That's number five.
That's number five.
In the top 25 moments of the career of John Lopez. Where are you going to go from there?
I'll go to the next one that we don't have audio on, but it's in my top five. We'll have audio for the next three. And that is the 2006 Winter Olympic Games in Salt Lake City. I'm sitting there at the opening ceremonies, and they bring in the Olympic flag, right? And so, if you remember, I never got that autograph in 96 of Muhammad Ali. Remember I told that story? I never got that one.
Big mistake.
So as I met him and hung out with him on the elevator there a little bit. So 06, Steven Spielberg and Lech Walesa, the former Polish politico, whatever you want to call him, were holding the Olympic flag in the opening ceremonies. I go back up to the press box and... You're looking at it right there. Yeah, Steven Spielberg and Lech Walesa are two of the people holding the Olympic flag. And so I go up to the press box, and they're right there. They're sitting right there answering questions from reporters and stuff. So I sit down, and once again, I have the opening ceremonies ticket in my pocket because you just carry it. And I speak with Lech Walesa a little bit, and then I sit and speak with Steven Spielberg. And so we're talking. And I say, I kind of briefly tell him the story. I said, "You know, I once had a chance to have Muhammad Ali autograph my opening ceremonies ticket in 96. He goes, "Really?" I said, "Yeah, and I didn't do it. I, you know, just didn't bring myself to do it. He was my childhood hero, blah, blah, blah. I was intimidated." I said, "Well, would you mind signing it now?" So I've got in my office, I think you might have seen this one when you were at my house. In my office, I got the 2006 opening ceremonies ticket signed by Steven Spielberg, who held the Olympic flag that day.
Would you rather have Ali, though?
For me personally, yeah. But Spielberg is Spielberg. I mean, come on now.
And let's be honest, it would have been pretty classless of you to ask Ali to give you an autograph.
Come on.
Given the circumstance.
He was signing back then.
Okay.
I mean, it might not have been great.
I don't know how good he was signing, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that would have been a very wise move. That would have been kind of classless.
Number three, we do have audio, and that would be from... one of the greatest moments in this town's history.
And Draco Bottolini carrying the game is over, and it will go to a seventh and decisive game on Wednesday.
Rockets Knicks, 1994. John Starks misses the three-pointer. Rockets go on to win it and win their first NBA championship.
Yeah, that was a good series. It was a good series. Man, the Knicks were scrappy. That was a scrappy
ass
squad.
They were rough.
Derek Harper, tough as nails.
Yep.
You had Derek Harper. You had Anthony Mason. Mm-hmm. You had Patrick Ewing, Charles Oakley. It's a mean squad.
And so I'm sitting in the stands in 1996 in Atlanta watching the opening ceremonies. I watched one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in my life, ever.
It's a bold claim from you.
Well, here it is.
Look who gets it next. The greatest. Once the most dynamic figure in sports, a gregarious man, now trapped inside that mask created by Parkinson's syndrome. So in one sense, a poignant figure, but look at him. Still a great, great presence. Still exuding nobility and stature. And the response he evokes is part affection, part excitement, but especially respect. What a moment.
Well, let me finish the story. I was emotional. I mean, that was my childhood hero. He's the reason.
Muhammad Ali taking the torch up.
He was one of the reasons I'm even in this business, Muhammad Ali. I used to feign his. I got into boxing because of him. I used to feign his moves. I got to meet him a couple of times. But that was before this, and that's only half the story of that night. Because that same night, within a half hour of Muhammad Ali lighting the torch, I go back to the elevators to go up to the press box because they're going to have availability with some of Ali's people and some of the people, you know, from the Olympic International Olympic Committee, etc. I run into the elevator, and there's a bank of them, but I run into one elevator, and I hear, "Hold that elevator." And it's a security guard, and I'm like, "Oh, okay." So I put my hand on the elevator. Security guard, another security guard, another couple people, and the greatest. They were holding the elevator for Muhammad Ali. So get this, and this is the moment I'll never forget.
Man.
I'm sitting in the elevator, standing in the elevator.
So, what's up, man?
In my left top shirt pocket is the opening ceremony ticket from the 1996 Olympic Games.
You would have had that, too. It was the most magical. It's like the most magical moment in ceremony history. It's not like just getting Ali's autograph. I have an
it's
Ali
the
autograph.
Night he lit the torch.
That's what I'm saying. I have an Ali autograph.
Right.
You would have had the one
to
on
my right
the torch, dude.
Is Muhammad Ali. And it's an elevator all the way to the top of the stadium. So I have a couple of minutes to talk with him there. And I said, "That was incredible, champ. I'll never forget it." I said, "That was incredible, champ."
What'd he say?
And he kind of like says something. I don't remember what. And smiles and kind of like. Like not fist bumps me, but kind of like, you know, hits my shoulder or whatever, like in a thank you kind of manner.
Throw you his shirt like me and Joe Green.
Hold on. And I put my hand on the ticket. And I have keep in mind, I have a Sharpie hanging from my lanyard.
Oh.
I put my hand on my ticket,
gosh,
about to pull it off and ask him
so dumb
to sign the opening ceremony's ticket. Yes, it was stupid. And then at the last minute.
I don't think he could have signed it, man.
Yeah, he was. He was signing stuff back then. At the last minute, I just put it back in my shirt and said, nah.
That's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard.
It was because I was credentialed. I was covering the event. You're not supposed to do anything.
Who cares?
I know.
You're in an elevator with Ali.
Yeah. The night he lit the torch, the cauldron.
Dude, you made a big mistake.
I made a big mistake. It's almost funny though because
you were in an elevator with Muhammad Ali, man.
The story's almost funnier. That's insane. In a weird way that I didn't get the autograph.
That's insane though.
But to be able to pass that down to my kids, like, remember that night that he did that?
Bro.
Well, on the way up to the press box, he signed this opening ceremony.
Man. That's
I still
crazy.
Have the ticket. It's just unsigned.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
I'm depressed. We still got one more to go, right?
We got one more to go, and yeah, it's not Ali. It's
Man.
Not Carol Kyle's no-hitter. It's not the Dream Team. It's not Kerry Strug. It's not Reggie Miller. It's not Michael Westbrook. Those are all on my list. It's not Michael Jordan. It's not Tiger Woods. But it sure was special to be there that night.
Carter gets the snap. He's back in the end zone. He's in trouble. He's sacked for a safety. It's a deuce for the Texans. That's going to put it away. The Texans have done it. They have beaten the Dallas Cowboys on opening night in team history, 19-10.
Seth Payne.
So you're telling me that we've got Muhammad Ali, we've got Michael Jordan, we've got Carl Lewis, we've got all these legendary figures.
And Seth Payne.
Fidel Castro, and the man who rises to the top, the cream of the cream, the creme de la creme, the number one moment of John Lopez's career, not being in an elevator with Muhammad Ali, Seth Payne sacking Quincy Carter.
It's fun to be the penetrator sometimes.
And that's what he was right there.
I said it was kind of
What do you remember about that day?
That and Billy Miller scoring the first touchdown.
Number 83.
Yeah, Billy Miller scoring the first touchdown in Texans history.
He had some freckles. That's the 25 best moments of the career from the career of John Lopez. John, I gave you a homework assignment, and during the dark days of June, as they like to say, you came through.
Thank you, sir. That was fun. That was a lot of fun.
Came through like Muhammad Ali. Got to give you some credit.
Mm-hmm.
That was good. You can hear that at sportsradio610.com. Very much enjoyed it. We'll do stuff like that as we continue to work our way toward training camp and the dark days of summer right here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up after us, though, Rich Lord and Clint Sterner. Sean's still out at the Golden Nugget. I guess he was drinking old fashions yesterday.
He's got some red wine going today.
Fiance. He's been known to do that. The great Rich Lord joins us right now. Mr. Lord, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, guys. I was on an elevator once with Joe Garagiola.
Oh, yeah? Joe Garagiola.
Can I say I don't
great.
Know who that is? Can I say I don't know who that
it's
is?
It's about the best I can do.
Who is that?
Great catcher, Hall of Fame catcher.
A little before your time. Not a Hall of Famer.
No. But he's Hall of Fame because of broadcasting.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
But not as a player.
Yeah.
Was pretty much an average player who grew up on the hill the Italian section of St. Louis with Yogi Berra.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking old school here, Landry. This was a guy who I think has passed away recently.
Oh, yeah, recently.
At one point, though, this was a guy who, as a former player, not only was doing World Series on NBC, mm-hmm. he was at the top of his broadcasting profession. He had a stint as a host of the Today Show for a while.
He did that. He did a game show, I believe.
I think you're right.
I think he did a game show. Gary Shiller was big time.
It's a name from the past, admittedly. Mm-hmm. Which I think I am as well.
Yeah, we all are. We all
are. Much respect. What's going on the show today with you and Clint?
Well, we were both lucky enough to be out at OTAs today.
There you go.
And, you know, before the practice starts, the media sort of congregates outside the practice field, and the sun was out today pretty heavily, unlike last week. And I was thinking to myself, you know, I got a hat in the car. I'm probably need to go get that hat. Well, I get the hat. I come walking back. They were inside today in the bubble.
Oh, there you go.
Weather not a factor. That's not a bad thing. That doesn't suck. Life doesn't suck when the Texans are practicing in the bubble.
It really doesn't. Did anything catch your eye out there? What caught your eye the most?
You know, I'll throw something at you that I plan to throw at Clint as well, and he and I haven't talked about this, which is good. It feels like OTAs, when you go to the practice, the best part of everything you get to observe is the passing drills.
Oh, yeah.
Is the quarterbacks dropping
back. It's
like
the most realistic.
Yes. Yeah. The receivers going one-on-one with the DBs. And I couldn't help but notice that Jordan Akins was working out exclusively with the wide receiver group.
Really?
Not the tight end group. Now, that might not mean anything. That might mean one day with the tight ends, one day with the wide receivers. I don't know. I don't want to make too much about it.
Or maybe it's like for those days that he's going to split wide, a la Gronkowski.
Well, let's face it. I think among the four tight ends, he most resembles a wide receiver, even though Jordan Thomas played wide receiver in college. But Jordan Akins working with the wide receivers made me wonder if this could be their entree to carrying all four tight ends, carry Jordan Akins as your last wide receiver. We'll see. Yeah. It's early.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
That's an impressive looking tight end bunch, though.
No kidding.
As far as just guys that are just massive, they got some massive human beings there. But it does. I'm with you. I think they're going to keep four. I don't know how they're going to do it, whether it's H-back, but you might have saw something there, Rich. That's actually really, really intriguing. What else we got on the show today?
Well, we'll share our observations on pretty much everything we saw out there today. Don't want to get too specific because I don't know if we're supposed to do that.
Right.
But the Astros continue drafting. I know you guys talked about the clarification from Daryl Morey, and I'm sure we'll dig into that as well. So normal Tuesday afternoon, Sean's still out at the Nugget, and we're going to have a lot of fun.
Clarification. Thank you very much. Triple Threat coming up with Rich and Hot Fudge a little bit later. Hot Fudge.
He done lost his damn mind.
Right, he did lose his mind. He wasn't too pleased with you telling him that, though. I'll tell you that. There might be a fight after the show.
Oh, no.
Out there in the hallway. I can guarantee you that. Figgy Fig, a lot of people upset with you for not knowing Mike Jones' phone number. He kind of lost a little bit of street cred there. I don't want to say you lost listeners to the Gyms and Juice. I'm just saying you lost a little bit of street cred there.
It's all good, but I wasn't really listening to Mike Jones that much.
He was regional to a large extent.
I mean, he had a couple.
He had a couple.
He had a couple songs, but
Mike Jones finally came out after 5 years of promotion.
And I ain't about to do karaoke with his song.
Exactly. And by the way, somebody else texted, you know, all that 25 that we went through, that's going to be posted separately on the podcast, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so if they want to hear that,
they want to hear the top 25. That was a damn good list, John Lopez.
Thank you, sir.
Can't believe you didn't get that Muhammad Ali autograph.
It's almost better in a weird way this way.
Not really.
Better story.
I really wouldn't say all that. I 100% would not say all that. But Texans OTAs, phase three, it's going to wrap up this week. The biggest takeaway from you today is, based on what we heard from the Texans, I think Tim Kelly's scripting practice is something that kind of raised my eyebrows a little bit.
I'm sure Rich and Hot Fudge are going to be able to talk about that some, but basically said he's working the script already, which is a good sign if you're talking about working the script in preseason and maybe even calling a few plays, which is my big question. That's my biggest question.
And he also sounds a lot more giddy than he normally did before, so he does seem like one of those guys that absolutely loves football. I think it's safe to say, though, that of all the things and all the takeaways we've taken away from this season, it seems like a wide-ranged opinion that the Texans are going to be keeping four tight ends. I think that's why it's
also a big takeaway what Rich said, which I'm sure we're gonna dig in a little deeper.
And Tim Kelly, what was his specialty? He was a tight end guy, so maybe Tim Kelly knows how to get these guys a little bit more involved. But Jordan Akins, Jordan Thomas, Darren Fells, and then, of course, the water polo tight end, Kahale Waring.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some more weapons for Deshaun Watson, and he can spread the love as Kiki Coutee, Will Fuller, continue to try to stay on the field because they missed half the damn season last year. I tried to tell Hot Fudge that in the hallway.
What do you say? They're going to have 300 combined catches?
I don't know. I think it went up to 700. I'm not sure. We'll see. He's going to get to speak for himself here shortly. Thanks to Figgy Fig for being the best at what he do. Thanks to John McClain for coming in earlier, hiking his leg on our takes. I think you had a little bit more hikes than me today, John Lopez.
I think I did.
Tomorrow, we're going to hear more from the Texans assistant coaches. We're going to talk about the Astros against the Seattle Mariners. The fast-working Wade Miley going to be on the mound. So he'll get you to bed earlier than you'd think. We'll also give you the latest on the Rockets. And Stanford Brout, he's going to join us for his weekly visit at 12:40. Thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10 o'clock, the Triple Threat with Rich and Hot Fudge Sterner next, right here on Sports Radio 610.
Love you guys, man. Y'all have a good day, man. Enjoy yourself.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.